In the past 10 years, Sadler's Wells in London has moved from a struggling theatre to one that's achieving an annual revenue of €30 million, over 70% of which comes from ticket sales. The man behind this transformation is the artistic director of Sadler's Wells, Alistair Spalding. He was in Dublin recently to share the secrets of his success with Irish arts audiences. Aoife Philbin Bowman caught up with him and is with me now in studio. Alistair Spalding, before we get into it, give us a background on Sadler's Wells and where it was at when he actually took it over, Abby.
Interestingly, there's actually been a theatre on this site since 1683, and there have been six different venues in that time, a sort of 330-year period. And the current building that's there was opened in 1998, and it was actually one of the first projects funded by the UK's National Lottery. It's been there for so long that it's got quite a rich history. I mean, in the 1830s, Dickens wrote, the theatre was in the condition of being entirely delivered over to as ruffianly an audience as London could shake together. Fights took place anywhere at every period of the performance. And in the 1920s, then, they were trying to build the fifth of the six buildings that have been there, and people like Winston Churchill and Stanley Baldwin and G.K. Chesterton all gave money. But I think since World War II, it's really become associated strongly with dance. It's had various different, you know, opera house and so on. But dance really became the thing.
Yeah, Margot Fonteyn was there in the 1930s, and post-war there was a big dance
absolutely.
Tradition.
They even had their own ballet company up until 1955, and then again from 1970 to 1990. And then that ballet company actually decamped and became the Birmingham Royal Ballet. And since in the 1990s, it's sort of lost its way a bit. It was doing kind of West End shows, things like The Sound of Music, The King and I. It was doing panto, so the brand had been somewhat diluted.
And even though didn't they build a purpose built dance theatre, which was completed in 1998, and it still was struggling.
Well, in fairness, when it was rebranded and it came back, there was a sort of a strong dance performance, and then again it sort of lost its way a bit. And a show like Stomp, which was all very percussion based, was there, which wasn't strictly dance. And
Matthew Bourne's famous Swan Lake started there before its big West End success.
Absolutely, it debuted there in 1995. So it did have still a strong dance tradition, but the brand was essentially being diluted. And Alistair Spalding, when he came in, his big thing was he said, look, let's just get back to what it is we do best, which is dance. Let us be the place for dance. Let us find the best people who are doing dance. And in fact, another innovation he made was that he realised we do our best work when we have our own people. So he dramatically increased the number of associate artists with Sadler's Wells. And he really tried to get the message out that this is our unique selling point. And in fact, that was part of his advice to Irish venues, was find your unique selling point, whatever it is you do, whether it's music or comedy or theatre, do it really, really well and get the message out that that's what you do. One of the points I discussed with them about that, though, is that essentially, there's a difficulty there, which is that, you know, it's all very well and good if you're in London in the West End, where there are lots of West End theatres doing that type of thing, and you can be the one place that does dance, and you've got busloads of Americans and, you know, Belgians and Chinese coming in every day, you know, every time of the year. If you're the Burr Theatre, an art centre, or you're the Source in Thurles or Eanston Castle Blaney, it's much harder to do that. How do you manage outside London? And this was the answer he gave me.
Obviously, we have 1,500 seats. They're also a big house, and it is all year round. I think that would be difficult in a small with a smaller population. No doubt about it. We're in a very particular position in London. But I think you could certainly look at doing a year-round program in a smaller venue, you know, something which is, you know, say 300 seats. And I think people really didn't believe it could work even in London. And it is a quite unique model. There's only one or two places in the world that have a year-round programme at that scale. And so I think the thing is you have to offer it to people. And luckily, it's coincided with a real interest in the art form, a real revival in people coming to see dance.
Alistair Spalding there, the artistic director of Sadler's Wells. So, Abby, he, in his time there, he has courted quite some controversy.
Yeah, there's been quite a number of controversies. I think probably the most extreme example is a piece they did about 5 years ago called In the Spirit of Diaghilev, which had four parts to it, and three of them were broadcast on BBC4. And this is the piece he wrote at the time. He said, viewers will not see the work that formed the fourth part of the programme, the contribution from choreographer Javier de Frutos, which featured scenes of papal sodomy, garroting and pregnant nuns, has been deemed unsuitable for the pre-watershed slot. And he said, look, this is fabulous that as live theatre we're still doing work that can shock, and that is still that you know, Diaghilev himself, you know, tested the mores of Parisian audiences in 1913. And if we hadn't done that, and if that hadn't been challenged, we would never see love scenes, certainly among people of the same sex, probably not even of people of the opposite sex, even on television now. So he sort of celebrated that. And I asked him if he could explain to our listeners why exactly he felt papal sodomy was a good idea on the dance stage.
Well, it didn't literally. There was no literal sodomy on stage, I hasten to add. But what I was saying, I suppose, was that I felt glad that, you know, that we could. It was a particularly controversial piece in an evening where we were celebrating Diaghilev, the great impresario. And of course, he did shock audiences sometimes. And so the choreographer involved wanted to follow that spirit. And, you know, it was. You see much worse things on television, actually. But for some reason, because it was on a stage and then would be shown on television, people couldn't get on with it. So I thought, well, actually, it's quite good that we can do that. Clearly, we don't want to upset people deliberately, and we want to be honest about what's going on. But we should, you know, artists should be allowed to have freedom of expression on the stage within limits, obviously.
To what extent, AB, do you think that Alistair Spalding was lucky in his timing? Was there sort of a general rebirth in dance happening in Britain at that time when he took over in Sadler's Wells?
Well, I think he's been lucky, but I think he's also made his own luck to a large extent. I think he's been supportive of dance. He's given it a space to really blossom and grow. And he was telling me that there isn't a long tradition of dance in Britain. In comparison, say, to France, where Louis XIV apparently invented many of the moves for ballet, there isn't that great tradition in Britain. But he actually sees that as quite a positive thing because he says, we don't have any weight of history, unlike other art forms. And you explain that point to me here.
The thing about dance is that it doesn't really have what holds a lot of other art forms back, like opera in particular. It's very difficult to innovate in opera, actually, you know, because it's so set. And dance has a particularly contemporary dance. Ballet is slightly different. It has such a short history that it's very open. And I always say that you never really know what's going to happen when you go and see a dance performance at Sadler's Wells. It could be that the stage is filled with water, or there's 2,000 carnations covering the stage, or there's a horse on stage, or all sorts of things can happen, and it's very, very unpredictable. And we're also very clear about what things are. We're not going to trick you and say, you know, this is one thing when it's another. And so I think you'd be safe looking through the season. You'd say, you can sort of tell which are the bits you're not going to enjoy, but there'll be plenty that you can.
So Alistair Spalding there, clearly with some very strong advice. But how does that transfer into Irish audiences? And did he address that when he was there, AB?
Well, he did talk about that. I mean, I suppose his experience is very much from London, and that is, you know, the world that he knows quite well. And he was just trying to sort of emphasise certain points about excellence, about really focusing on your market and knowing them well and just getting a reputation for excellence and being innovative in that way.
And you also spoke to Una Carmody of Irish Arts Audiences. Did she feel that they had picked something up from what Alistair Spalding had been saying about his success?
She did. I mean, she actually spoke to me before the speech that he was going to give for arts audiences. But she was saying that, you know, she deals with arts all the time, and her basic mission is to try and grow audiences for the arts in Ireland. She said the one thing she would really emphasise to people is their own website. She said people spend a lot of time on Facebook and Twitter, and it can take up a lot of your headspace. And actually, the reality is your own website is where it's at. It's the shop window that you have. And she said, particularly now with mobile devices, when you're competing with things like the cinema, make sure your website is mobile friendly. That's the one bit of advice she would give.
All right, AB Philbin-Bowman talking to us there. He was speaking with Alistair Spalding of Sadler's Wells earlier, and the Arts Audiences event that he attended. If you want to find out more from that website, artsaudiences.ie.